Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. I'm your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Today, Robert Pendicio, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, joins us to discuss curricular reform. Then, on the Research Minute, Amber reports on the condition of education from the National Center on Education Statistics. All this on the Education Gadfly Show.
This is the Education Gadfly Show.
So maybe we can, someday there'll be a study on school-based goat lawn mowing for the Research Minute.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at fordhaminstitute.org. And now, welcome back our special guest for this week, Robert Pendicio. Robert, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's been a while.
It has been a little while. It is great to have you back. Robert is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. You know who else is at Fordham? My regular co-host, David Griffith.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Robert.
It's been too long, Robert. Well, you've been busy, you know, now that you are a gentleman farmer in upstate New York. I'm curious, it's springtime. Is that mean planting season?
Of course. Yeah. Been churning over the garden, been spading in, peat moss and nutrients into the soil, been preparing the lower 40 for haying. Yeah, we got stuff to do.
Have you gone into any animal husbandry yet?
Well, I got a dog.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't count. What about some chickens?
Well, my neighbors have chickens and keep me in well supplied with eggs. Otherwise, I'd have chickens. But I have been lately threatening to get goats, which stay tuned.
It's a big thing. They're having a renaissance because they take the goats to solar farms and they eat the grass around the solar panels.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this, too. We don't have this here, but in suburban communities, they have these rent-a-goat things where they bring a truck full of goats and they de-weed your yard every now and then. You know, they get out and it makes the local news or whatnot. So, you know, I just think they're adorable.
There's an obvious education hook here, which is that this is how we should mow the lawn at schools. No more lawn mowing. We should just bring in the goats. The kids would love it.
There are old newsreels you can go watch. I'm sure they're on YouTube. Back in the day, this is how they kept the White House lawn in D.C. They had a shepherd. They had sheep. That's before they had mowers. They had sheep.
I think this is an SEL program of some sort.
You know, I try to prepare for these conversations, Mike, and it is always futile.
Okay, enough with the sheep. It is time to talk education reform. And today we're going to, in particular, talk about curriculum reform. Let's do that on Ed Reform Update. All right, so sometimes I jump right into questions, but I think I need to give a little background this time. So let's call this Mike's monologue today. Robert, you and I both wrote long chapters for a project for the Hoover Institution looking at the 40 years since A Nation at Risk. Mine was about standards-based reform, the history going back to the 80s. Yours was about curriculum reform, and not surprisingly, they overlapped. You know, my argument was that back in the 80s and 90s, we had a big debate about what standards-based reform should be. Everybody agreed on standards and on assessments to some degree. The big question was what the third leg of the stool should be. And people like Checker Finn said it should be accountability. You know, schools should get more autonomy and flexibility, but we should hold them accountable for results. Other people like the AFT and others in the ed reform space said, no, it really should be about capacity building, standards, tests, and then we should build up schools' capacity, including around curriculum. And I basically do a mea culpa. I say, look, Checker and me eventually and others, we were wrong. Actually, we should have leaned into capacity building back then. Of course, No Child Left Behind did not do that. It leaned very heavily into accountability. And so we had this whole period of time when schools felt a lot of pressure, didn't know what to do, and didn't do the one thing that might have really helped, which was to adopt a great curriculum. Along comes Robert Pendicio saying, hey, curriculum is super important. It's the most important tool we can give teachers, and we should do that. Now, where we agree is that really curriculum reform is a huge, important part of standards-based reform. But my argument is that in the last 10 years, we've been at it big time. Again, thanks in large part to you, Robert, You know, we've been we see after the Common Core, funders, states putting a lot of money into some curricular reform efforts. And now we've got things like core knowledge, language arts getting adopted in my very blue home district of Montgomery County. You got Wit and Wisdom out there. You got Eureka Math. You got Illustrative Math. There's finally great curriculum. And yet in your piece, you say curriculum reform is the one reform that's never been tried. So explain.
Okay, well, let me first, but you know, do I get to say I told you so, which are the—
Yes,
you know, the—
yes. You can take a bow. Yes.
You know, just to kind of respond to your very, you know, cohesive monologue there. And I'll defend the, you know, like socialism, it's never been really tried, right? You know, the issue with standards, and I had no problem with standards-based reform, and I had no real problem with accountability either. But, you know, and I think my reform credentials are in pretty good order, but I spent a lot of time pointing out the flaw in that logic, you know, and again, I hate to be that guy who waves the bloody shirt and says, well, unless you've been a classroom teacher, but this is one of those instances in which it really does help to have been a classroom teacher. In other words, the internal logic of the standards and accountability and assessment era, if you like, was, look, schools know what to do. Teachers know what to do. We don't need to micromanage them. We just need to hold them accountable for their results. And for years, I've been the guy to say, wait a minute, where'd you get that idea from, that teachers know what to do, that you know, what happens in a classroom is pretty much, you know, set in stone. And now we just need to kind of, you know, measure who does it well and reward them and, you know, counsel out those who do it poorly. And so when you say curriculum reform has been tried, it really hasn't. I mean, every available— And look, for what it's worth, Mike, I've lately been trying to train myself. Whenever somebody says, like you just did, curriculum adoption, I correct them and say, you mean curriculum purchase, because that's the way it works. States and districts and schools do not adopt curriculum. They purchase it. Then they try to persuade the teachers to adopt it and to implement it well. And this gets into issues of how well we train teachers to implement curriculum, how much PD goes into it, et cetera. These are some of the issues that I discussed in that larger paper that you referenced. So, yeah, I'll concede a third of the point. There's a seriousness about curriculum now. There's a recognition that, hey, what kids do all day matters. But as I think we discussed last week offline, the evidence of a true curriculum reform movement will mean a lot less of teachers, as I like to say, calling audibles at the line of scrimmage, going on Teachers Pay Teachers and Share My Lesson and looking for materials, which almost literally every teacher in America does. It's all or in part every day. It will look a lot more like teacher PD centering curriculum, as opposed to, you know, just getting a little bit of it, you know, here and there. It will look like visible evidence that we are serious about not just purchasing curriculum, but adopting it in every sense of that word, implementing well with fidelity and rigorously.
Okay. All right. No, that all makes sense. And it sounds like we agree on a couple points. One is that there has been movement, right? I mean, at least it's on the agenda, curriculum, right? We have seen some of these new providers gain market share, right? That we generally think are pretty good curriculum products, maybe not perfect, but pretty good. And, you know, the evidence is, again, at least they're getting purchased. I mean, look, Robert, we both know for a long time, we just used to, you know, complained that curriculum publishers were just as bad as all the other bad guys in education, you know, whether you're right, you're talking about the ed schools or the teachers unions or the, you know, that they put out, you know, this black and they, you know, bought superintendent steak dinners and got them to adopt their textbooks that were terrible. And so we now see some movement. We certainly see movement, of course, in early reading with the science of reading stuff, but in ELA and math as well. And what you're saying is what we don't know yet is how deep that's actually gone, and that you want to see evidence that teachers are actually that getting the really very intensive professional development they need to understand these curricula and to teach them well, that they are now saying that they are not spending much, if any, time having to go around looking how to supplement these curriculum. Yeah, and look, and I think that all sounds right. And I suspect we've probably made more progress at the elementary school level, where we've seen to be more focused on this. And, you know, maybe as kids get older and as these subjects get more, specialized, you know, I doubt we've done a whole lot, for example, to help us, the random high school social studies teacher who teaches the one, you know, section of European history. They're probably still doing it on their own. But I think that the first grade teacher is, you know, in a lot of places probably does have something.
Yeah, almost certainly. And you cited the science of reading movement. And I think that's probably a contributing factor. You know, I've told the story 1,000 times about how when I was first teaching in the South Bronx at a low performing elementary school, and they asked me what grade I wanted to teach, I said fifth grade, which nobody wanted to teach because that was considered the most challenging year. But I had emerged from ed school not knowing how to teach kids how to read. And I thought I would be found out. And it turns out that that was just standard. So, yeah, now we've got the standard or the science of reading movement, which is really kind of valorizing decoding, you know, early literacy skills. And that's a good thing. It's, again, you know, as always, a lot more complicated than that. Look, can I raise one other issue about this whole curriculum movement? And I wrote this in a piece for Fordham last week. Yeah, I'm an unabashed curriculum guy, and there's lots of good reasons for curriculum, you know, again, not just purchase, but adoption. Because, you know, you want to encourage a coherent, cumulative student experience. We are, I think, both disciples of E.D. Hirsch Jr. and bought into his ideas about vocabulary and knowledge and how that's where language proficiency comes from. But there's another, you know, I think, equally compelling argument why we should take curriculum seriously, and it's simply to make the teacher's job more manageable. Have very recent data from Pew that shows what 8 out of 10 teachers simply say, I've got too much on my plate. I can't do all the things that I'm expected to do. Well, we know from data going back at least a decade that teachers are spending 10 or 12 hours a week on average. I spend a lot more creating, curating, customizing their curriculum because, Mike, there is this idea that, oh, no curriculum is going to work for my kids. You know, this is another, you know, aspect of the curriculum reform movement that's not happening. It's just, you know, it's just relegated to second class citizenship. But that number's got to come down because we are putting more and more on teachers' plates. Something's got to give. And to my mind, and I say this again as a former teacher, I wanted more time to give feedback, to study student work, to become, you know, a better instructional deliverer. The thing that I probably could have done less of is that creating, curating lessons from scratch. Give me back that time so I can spend it doing higher yield things. Even if so my message to the field, to teachers is, look, even if your lessons are the greatest things in sliced bread with raisins, somebody else can do that work. We need you to focus on diagnosis, feedback, the stuff that literally there's no one else available to do.
That sound right, David?
Yeah, I have a question, which is, you know, basically, what do you mean by curriculum or by implementation, right? Because, you know, I've read these accounts from Robert and other folks of places like, say, Success Academy, and I'll probably butcher this, right? Where it's extremely scripted, right? And I've also been subject to this, right? Some of what is considered implementation is literally like the teacher will read this out loud to the students, right? And, you know, then ask the following question. And I guess my question is, like, how far down are we going, right? Because a curriculum is one of those fuzzy words, right? Does it mean the reading? Does it mean the questions? Does it mean the lesson plan? Does it mean the video? Does it literally mean, like, how the class time is spent? Like, I guess I'm just trying to wrap my head around what are the most essential elements that you think need to be teed up for teachers? Because my assumption is you don't want to control their every, you know, body movement for the next.
No, of course not. Although, look, for what it's worth, I have never taught under, you know, the direct instruction curriculum pioneered by Zig Eggleman. You know, we kind of botched that term. There's, you know, I always differentiate between big I, direct instruction, reading mastery, so to speak, the Engelman work, and small I, direct instruction, which is meaning, you know, I'm giving explicit instruction to students. So the instances of what you just described as scripted curriculum outside of big DI, I think that's fairly rare. So the term I like to use is prescriptive curriculum. In other words, I'm given a lesson plan. I'm given materials. You invoke Success Academy. I spent a lot of time observing there. They're not scripted whatsoever, but I would describe what they do as prescriptive. There's a lesson plan. There's materials. There's what they call intellectual preparation. You're not designing the lesson from scratch. You are studying student work. You're anticipating patterns of error, et cetera. You're practicing delivering the lesson as opposed to doing the lesson design work. That, to me, feels like the sweet spot.
All right. Well, speaking of a sweet spot, that was a very sweet description of what's going on, Robert. We will, I guess, let your half is glass. The glass is half empty view win the day today.
I believe that the glass is half full, Mike, which is just deep enough to drown in.
Okay, even better. Okay, Robert Pendicio, now spending most of his time at the American Enterprise Institute when he is not turning over the soil on his farm. Hey, Robert, great to have you with us. Hope you come back sometime soon.
Anytime, guys.
All right, now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Always nice to chat with our good friend, Robert.
Yes.
He's busy up there on the farm.
Is he?
Well, I don't know. It's out now. I think so. He does stuff for real. He builds, you know, bookshelves with his own hands. He's out there tilling the land.
Is okay. he?
I just don't, I don't know if I see that, but my first vision was milking a cow. And I like when I think about working on a farm, but I don't think that's happening.
No animals yet. No animals yet. Do you guys have chickens in your neighborhood, Amber?
No chickens. I think the HOA would have a problem with that.
Gotcha.
And an extended discussion about goats that I hesitate to summarize, Amber, but apparently they're interested in solar panels, Mike.
Yes. Around the solar panels, the grass that grows around the solar panels. Yes.
Wow.
But, and I'm telling you, the school idea is a good one. So maybe we could someday there'll be a study on school-based goat lawn mowing for the Research Minute, but not today. What do you got for us today, Amber?
All right. We have got the new condition of education 2023, hot off the presses. So we've got the latest and greatest federal data. Doesn't sound too exciting, but I'm going to make it a little more exciting. We're going to do this quiz style. Just keep in mind that just because it's the condition of education 2023, it doesn't necessarily mean it's from 2223. It's just they pull from a bunch of different sources. And so sometimes it's just the most recent data that we have for any particular data point. I'm going to start easy. I got a bunch of these things. We'll just see how our time goes and how good you guys are. I want to know the percentage of public school students enrolled in charter schools as of fall 2021.
I'll go with 7%.
Mike?
Yep. Well, let's see, 2021. Yeah, I think that's right, but I'll say 6% just to be different.
Okay, 7.4. So pretty darn close, David.
It'd be embarrassing if we couldn't get that one, right?
Yeah, we should know that one.
I started off easy. All right, let's get a little bit harder. I want the, for 2022, the students 3 through 21 that are receiving special education services as a percentage of overall public school students?
12%.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. All right. I'll say 13%. I'll take the high side.
14.7.
Oh, wow. Really? That's 14.7, man.
That is higher than I thought.
That's getting pretty high.
It is getting high. Let's see what you do with the percentage of public school teachers who are male as of 2021.
You want me to go first this time?
Go ahead, David.
All right. I'll go with 27%.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 23.
Mike, you are correct. 23.2.
Yes.
All right. What about as of 2022? The percentage of students who scored, we should be keeping score. Oh, darn, I forgot.
Yeah, I am keeping score. It's 2-1, David.
percentage of students who scored at or above NAEP proficient in 2022 at the 12th grade level.
In which subject?
Math.
Boy, during the pandemic, 12th grade, which is our terrible worst grade, gosh, in math, which is also bad. I'm going to say 22%.
Above proficient, right?
at or above proficient.
I'm going to say 30%.
24%. That's Mike. All right. Let's try. We're going to move on to a little bit more high school. The percentage of high school graduates who had completed a calculus course in 2019 is the latest data point here.
All right. It's my turn, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll say 14%.
9%.
Yeah. This is David, 16%.
Whoa. Completed, not passed, right?
It says they completed. Yes, that's
I think passed. That probably means the same thing, right?
Right. Okay.
The big question is, what does calculus mean?
Completed, not. Yes.
Right.
Spelled in.
All right. We want the immediate college enrollment rate of high school completers at four-year institutions in 2021, immediate college enrollment rate of high school completers at four-year institutions in 2021.
All right. So I believe the overall rate around that time would have been about 66%, but that's going to include two-year schools. So, gosh, I don't know, 45%.
I'm so low on that, 40%.
43.
Oh. Woo, man, pretty good at this, Amber. I mean, come on.
We're doing okay here, actually, yeah.
I mean, we could save the government a lot of money. They don't need to go out and collect these data. We just, right. Yeah, pretty accurate on our own.
You got it. I'm impressed, I will admit. All right, let's move on to the top three graduate degree fields in 2021. So these are the top three master's programs. All right. I'll give you one of the three. I was going to give you two, but you're doing so darn good. I'm just going to give you one. One is the health professions, like in related health professions is one. So any idea what the other two are, the top master's graduate degree fields in 2021?
I'll go with teaching business.
Okay.
Oh, man, those were what I was going to guess, too. So let me add to that psychology.
Bad, but David's got it. Education and business are the two.
That wasn't fair, Mike. We'll call that one a tie.
Nice. Nice.
All right. Let's talk about who attained, let's see, annual earnings by educational attainment in 2021. You had an associate's degree in 2021. What do you think you're making? You're 25 to 34 median annual earnings.
$50.
$50,000. Come on.
I'm going to say 60 because of inflation.
45. Good job, Mike. Whew. All right, let's move on to a bachelor's degree. Same year. You're still 25 to 34.
Your turn, David.
I don't know. Okay. Right. 65.
$55,000.
61.6. So. David was closer on that one. All right, we got just three more here. I'm going to go easier again. Hopefully you know this one. The average pupil-teacher ratio in 2021 across all elementary secondary schools.
Teachers or staff?
This is the pupil-teacher ratio.
Is it my turn or yours, Mike?
I think it's your turn.
I'm going to say 17.
And I'm going to say 14.
15.4.
Our averages are pretty good.
They are. All right. Two more. In 2021, what percentage of 18 to 24-year-olds were neither enrolled in school nor working?
Well, this is tricky because it's during the pandemic.
It is.
Neither in school nor working. That is, I'm going to say 20%.
I'll take the high side. I'll say 25%.
14.7.
Oh.
Not as bad as we thought. All right, last one. That's my drum roll. This is 2021. I want to know what percentage of male 25 to 34-year-olds had a bachelor's or higher degree. Percentage of male bachelor or higher degree.
That's you, David. That's you.
Okay, I will go with 18%.
Oh my gosh, you're way off, I think. I think it's 35.
Seriously?
You got it. 34.7.
Oh, my. Really? For the youth.
Wait, yeah. For what age group?
They were 25 to 34. All right, now give me the one for females. Same thing. 25 to 34. They got a bachelor higher degree.
All right. Well, I would have said like 30, but clearly I'm wrong. I'll say 40%.
Mm-hmm. Probably 45.
43.6.
Yeah. Partly, what's interesting is now for white women, that number is now over 50%, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. All right. That's what I got. Anything notable or surprising through those latest statistics?
I think we were pretty well on it. So not too many surprises here for us. You know, I am actually, I think if you looked at the numbers, a lot of those numbers you said are surprisingly stable, even with the pandemic, right? You would think that would have been a whammy, but maybe not, you know?
I'm surprised. Yeah. I'm surprised there aren't more young people adrift doing nothing that year, to be honest.
Yeah.
People are either employed or in school, which I guess is good news.
Well, according to what they said on a survey.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to ask you private school enrollment, but I figured, what you guys know that, right? The latest private school enrollment numbers?
9%.
Oh, my gosh, Mike. Yep. 8.6.
Amber, I actually read the condition of education. I like that report very much.
I mean, you really might. Have you looked? Did you thumb through it when the link was sent out?
No, I'm often looking at those tables. So look, I am a big fan of descriptive data. I think we need to know a lot more about just what's happening out there.
Well, clearly you do, Mike. I got to say, I'm impressed. David, you got to study up. You did pretty good, but you got to study up for next year, 2024.
Well, you just made me feel really good. You made my day, Amber. Thank you. All right. Well, hey, we are though way, way over time after that very lengthy quiz. So that is all the time we've got for this week. So until next week.
I'm David Griffith.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at fordhaminstitute.org.